Good morning. We'll call this meeting of the Job Growth, Energy, Affordability, Policy, and Finance Committee to order. The one order of business today is to take public testimony on House File 843. Before we begin taking public testimony, let me just give a shout out to Minnesota's law enforcement community and the outstanding work they're doing enforcing the traffic laws in the state of Minnesota.
Mr. Chair, do Teslas go that fast? I didn't. No?
Is that something you care to share with the committee Twitter account?
The first testifier on the list. First testifier on the list is Mr. Dan Dorman. On deck is Patty O'Keefe. Dan, you lost some hair.
Yeah.
Oh, Marty, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members, for the opportunity to be here today and for all your hard work that went into crafting a bill. And like any bill of this size, some people are going to love it, some people are going to hate it, but we think overall, in this case, I'm representing the Greater Minnesota Partnership. We have about 100 members, businesses, chambers of commerce, EDAs, all in Greater Minnesota. We're all about economic development in Greater Minnesota. And so as we looked at the bill, we thought it was a pretty good bill, and would like to make a couple of comments. First of all, Mr. Chair, starting with the jobs training provision that you was a keel bill that was that I went back and did a little research last night. It was really patterned after House File number 292 in the last session, which was carried by Representative Ward. I've got a copy of that bill if you'd like to see it, Mr. Chair. But we appreciate those provisions, those important job training provisions for Greater Minnesota being included in the bill. The Greater Minnesota Business Development Public Infrastructure portion, like everybody else, you know, given the constraint of your target, we'd like to have seen more money, but we are appreciative and can work with the appropriation in the bill. But I particularly want to thank you and call out the language changes, because we think that will have a significant impact in future, particularly as we try to create better paying jobs in Greater Minnesota. And we're thankful for the workforce housing provisions that are in your bill. We do have before the tax committee some important tax credits that we think will really make the difference in workforce housing. So we're hopeful that with when the bills come out and these programs are merged together, that the grant program that's in your bill, the TIF provision that's in your bill, with $30 million a year in tax credits will really make an important difference in job creation. So we're very pleased with what's in your bill and are very optimistic about the tax committee bill, but of course we have to reserve judgment until we see that. The only disappointment, but again, given the nature of the target, we understand that, is broadband funding. And I think that I would make just a couple of general comments that if individual members think that this is really important, and we believe it's important, our organization believes it's important, then go to leadership and let leadership know how important that is, and find a way to fund it. And that's not a criticism of your bill, given the target amount that you had to work with, but we do think it's important, and would also make the comment that is that program does move forward, that we should include provisions for economic development as a factor. You know, it's kind of interesting that if you go back in history to when the broadband office was set up before there was funding, the jurisdiction for broadband was shifted from Commerce to DEED, or the Department of Employment and Economic Development, in order to make this work for economic development. Yet, in working with the office, and I think they do a great job, but because of the language that was inserted into the legislation last year, they can't use economic development as a criteria. And so I think that hurts that program. But it, should there be funding, Mr. Chair, I hope you'd look favorably at trying to improve it from an economic development standpoint. But again, we're very pleased with the bill and look forward to working with you as it moves forward.
Thank you. And if you just state your name for the record, I don't think.
I will. Dan Dorman, D-O-R-M-A-N. I'm the executive director of the Greater Minnesota Partnership. To my left is another guy that would like to testify as well, with less hair, but still a good guy.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Marty Seifert with the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, and we'd like to echo what Mr. Dorman had to say. We are very pleased that BDPI will now be rolled in as part of the base. We're excited to see that being a permanent program, and also the funding that was attached to it. We're also excited that you were able to get the language in on jobs from Representative Keel's bill, which I know Mr. Dorman referenced, was modeled, not identical to, but modeled after Representative Ward's bill on trying to get fast and flexible training in the workplace. We're excited that you were able to get some workforce housing into the bill with the needs that we have in rural Minnesota related to that, and would also echo what Representative Dorman had, or Dan Dorman had said regarding broadband, that while we are very hopeful that the legislature, as it works through the process, will find some money, we'd like members who feel strong about this to contact leadership and to try to get that program back into funding. So we just want to thank you for your work on the bill and the members' long hours and listening to testimony, and appreciate the hard work everyone's done.
Thank you for your testimony. Patty O'Keefe and Chris Kunkel is on deck. Hello, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. This is nerve-wracking.
Well, trust me, just make sure you state your name so that 50 years from now when they listen to the tape, they're all talking.
Great. My name is Patty O'Keefe, PattyOkeefe. So I am a recent graduate of the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. I work at an organization called MN350 and 350.org, and I support fossil fuel divestment campaigns across the state of Minnesota and support the Midwest Fossil Fuel Divestment Network. And I also sat on the steering committee of the Minnesota Youth Environmental Network for the last 2 years, so I'm here representing the voices and concerns of a lot of youth in Minnesota, specifically around this bill. First wanted to start off saying a few things. I wanted to start off by saying thank you for taking public testimony. But I also want to say a few things about climate change. So there is 97% scientific consensus that climate change is happening and it's human caused. Oceans are 30% more acidic than they were 150 years ago, which is a really big problem because oceanographers and marine biologists are predicting potential full ocean ecosystem collapse by 2050 and by the end of the century. So, I mean, we're talking about fishless oceans here. Half of our bird species are predicted to potentially be gone by the end of the century. And the World Health Organization currently estimates that there are 150,000 deaths per year attributed to climate change. So these are people who are already dying from climate change-related impacts. So this is a serious, serious problem, and is what many have said is going to be the biggest challenge that humanity has ever faced. It's already the biggest challenge, I believe, that humanity has ever faced. And that's because it affects everything and everyone. It will touch every corner of our global economy and society, and the stakes could not be higher. We're talking about our own survival on the planet here. And we're talking about people who are already suffering, already dying, and that number is only going to go up. So to get rid of our greenhouse gas emission reduction goals at a time like this is, in my opinion, a huge step backwards. Even if it is claimed that we have a plan that will altogether lower greenhouse gas emissions, it's still to not have goals around that seems absolutely, to me, a bit ludicrous. It's times like these that we need to pull together and create stronger statewide goals and submit regular reports and assess if we're meeting those goals. So I'm very proud of our current renewable energy standard. I am very much a fan of increasing our renewable energy standard. We have to if we're going to address climate change in a legitimate way. So as a young person, seeing that our decision makers are potentially repealing our greenhouse gas reduction emission goals is very scary and sobering. And also eliminating studies that would assess how our state could get to 80% to 100% renewable energy to me seems short-sighted. The study doesn't mandate that we'll get to 80% to 100% renewable energy. It just looks at how we can do it. And at a time where our oceans are set to maybe not have any fish in them by the end of the century, it seems like this is the least that we could do, is to really study what it could look like for us to be reducing our greenhouse gas emissions significantly. And investing in clean energy means investing in jobs in Minnesota. Investing in clean energy and wind and solar, energy efficiency and biofuels can create jobs in Minnesota. And according to the Department of Commerce, we've seen a 78% increase in clean energy jobs since 2000, whereas we've seen an 11% overall state employment growth within that same period. So there's jobs to be made. I think making large-scale hydro as a part of this plan is exporting our jobs outside of the state. We could be producing these jobs inside of the state. It also has a lot of social justice concerns associated with it. So I'm a fan of keeping our jobs here in the state and using the full variety of renewable energy options, which definitely includes solar. So that's another thing. I think that this bill dramatically changes our solar programs that are just beginning to be established in Minnesota. In order for solar to be integrated into our energy mix, it needs support from our state, and they need consistency in legislation that directly impacts its programming, or it's not going to be able to compete in our statewide markets. According to the Minnesota Environmental Quality Board, Minnesota gets as much sun to power solar panels as in Houston, Texas. And solar demand in the U.S. went up by 33% in 2013 and was estimated to go up by 20% in 2014. And, I mean, my mom is applying for and expected to be able to get approved for a solar leasing program to put solar panels on our house. And we're not rich. My mom is a working-class single mother and feels that being able to have solar panels on our house is going to be able to lower her carbon footprint and also save her money in the long run. And the energy cooperative that has offered this program and advertised this program is being able to do so because of our current solar standard. So that's a real-life example of real-life impacts this is having on Minnesota's middle class. So as a conclusion, Minnesota can be a state that leads in renewable energy and cutting funding for important studies on new energy sources and taking out greenhouse gas reduction goals is a huge step backwards in a time when we can only afford to be making huge strides forward. And so the question that I want to leave you with is, are we sure this bill is the best way we're going to reduce greenhouse gas emissions as a state? Because it's a pretty high stakes bet to be making when the world and health of future generations are hanging in the balance. So thank you for listening to me today. I appreciate your time and attention.
And see, there was no reason to be nerve-wracked at all. Your testimony was, well, I don't agree with the substance of it, but I mean, your presentation was excellent. So no reason to be nerve-wracked at all, and we look forward to seeing you back here again.
Oh, great. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Kunkel, and then Lauren Lochtog is on deck. Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Chris Kunkel. I'm with Wind on the Wires. I'm going to keep my comments very, very brief. Last night, you all heard from Beth Soholt, our executive director, and following me will be several of our corporate members speaking about this bill, and I don't want to take any time away from them. In short, we are overall, I think we're disappointed in this proposal because it does not include the policy mechanism that has proven to be so successful in the state of Minnesota. We have a track record of enacting proposals and improving those proposals over time, and it's been 8 years since we've increased the renewable energy standard. And we think that for a number of different reasons, many of which this committee has already heard many times already this session, that it makes sense to move that standard up. Mr. Chair, we share your goal of a cheaper and cleaner energy mix and firmly believe that wind energy is already and will continue to play an integral role in achieving that goal. I think where we disagree is how we get there. We have a recipe for success in Minnesota, and we think that the best way that we can get there that benefits Minnesota is through increasing the renewable energy standard. And as I said, we're disappointed to not see that provision in this proposal. So overall, we don't believe that, as it's currently written, this bill improves the state's ability to compete for investment from wind companies, essentially. So with that, I'll wrap up my my comments. And as I mentioned, you'll be able to hear directly from a couple of wind businesses shortly.
Thank you, Mr. Kunkel. Mr. Lugtug? On deck is Gene Lee. Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Morning, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Lauren Lugtug with Otter Tail Power Company in Fergus Falls. And I'd like to speak to the bill, thank the chair for putting together some fresh ideas. I think one of the misperceptions here is that the renewable energy standard is being reduced. It's not being reduced. It's still, for us, 25 by 25. I think what's going on in the bill is that there are boutique niches that have been created over the years for specific technologies or specific ownership models without an eye toward affordability for ratepayers. I think what the bill does is it attempts to do cost-effective renewable energy, and I think all of the utilities who've been here have said they support cost-effective renewable energy. The most cost-effective renewable energy we can do is utility-scale wind or solar, and utilities have done a lot of utility-scale solar or utility-scale wind, and we're about to do utility-scale solar, all of us. What's good about utility scale is that there is a matching of costs and benefits. It is what I would call a complete democratization of renewable energy, so that those who benefit from renewable energy also pay for it, and you pay for it in direct proportion to however much you use. So I just want to thank the chair for leaving those features in place, and As we look toward dealing with niches within the RES, I think it's been stated that there are green jobs at stake, and that certainly is true, and green jobs are real. But I want to express my concern for all jobs in Minnesota, and all jobs, especially in small-town Minnesota, in manufacturing Minnesota. We have to be concerned about those jobs as well as green jobs. I'll try to answer a question that was asked by Representative Mahoney last night on behalf of my organization. What is Otter Tail's attitude toward using Excel ratepayer money? Our attitude is the same as Mr. Black and Mr. Johnson spoke last night, that is, we do not favor using Excel's ratepayer money to do projects in Otter Tail's service territory. If, to the extent it's paid for by Excel ratepayers, it should be used by Excel customers, we believe. So, now, if there happens to be general fund money in the energy fund in the bill, then obviously to that degree we would be willing participants in that. In August of 2003, and the reason I remember it was August 14th, I remember the date because it was the day that former Representative Chuck Brown passed away. There was an outage that began in Ohio, a transmission outage, and it cascaded across the northeast U.S. and southern Canada. It was blacked out Boston and New York for the better part of a day. And when it's hot or when it's cold, people get concerned when the power's not on. And I suppose they call the governor's office, but we know they call the utilities. We were very fortunate that did not come to to the MISO region. However, it scared utilities and concerned everyone in the state that we hadn't built big stuff for a long time, especially transmission. And so there were 11 utilities that got together and formed what's called CapEx 2020. And over the last 6 or 8 years, 11 utilities have spent $2.2 billion reinforcing the transmission grid in our region. And think about that. That's twice the cost of the Vikings' new stadium. I don't really enjoy the view as I drive home on I-94 on Fridays, but it's absolutely necessary to reinforce our transmission grid. It cost us $2.2 billion. We all have a share of that cost. In the month of March, Otter Tail put in place what's called a transmission cost rider, TCR. That means that we can collect the cost for that project from our ratepayers. For reasons I don't completely understand, it was done in sort of a wooden fashion, and it was put in place so that in March our customers actually saw a 10% rate increase because of the transmission cost rider. Representative Fabian, other folks up in our area got calls from some of their constituents who saw the difference on their power bills. Riders are useful, but I want to speak in favor of something that Excel has in here. It's called performance-based multi-year rate planning. It's an opportunity, again, to match long-term capital expenditures with long-term rates. I think that's a potentially very useful mechanism, and so Otter Tail supports that part of the bill. Conservation and energy efficiency. All of the utilities, but especially the investor-owned utilities, have a long history of doing cost-effective conservation in Minnesota. It's been a good program because the department allows us to customize our own SIP plan to our customer base and to the unique requirements of our service territory. And again, it's been democratized to all customers. All customers have benefited and all customers have paid. But there's nothing wrong with a fresh look at everything, and so we don't oppose a fresh look at SIP and energy efficiency. I think it's just important that everyone understands, as I've described in committee earlier, all of our organizations have sales and marketing teams. We have many vendor trade allies who help us do SIP and energy efficiency, and there's a great deal of inertia behind all of that after 20 or 25 years. So as the advisory task force here, if this was to pass, the advisory task force will meet and will reconsider all of these things. And on the task force, there's only one IOU. There's one representative of the rural electrics, and there's one representative of the municipal utilities. But in fact, all of us are what I would call executors of conservation and energy efficiency. So it's my hope, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, that in the process of doing the advisory task force, if in fact that does happen, that the views of all of the actors in conservation energy efficiency, our views will be taken into account. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Jean Lee? No Jean Lee? Brian Lindsley?
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Brian Lindsley, and I'm the Executive Director of MSP WIN. I'd like to thank the Chair and Committee for your support of Representative Gunther's Workforce Outcome Reporting Bill. These changes will make a good tool even better, making it more useful and informative to legislators and the public, and we appreciate you including this in your omnibus bill. As you continue to discuss ways to invest in training more adults to meet business needs and close the skills gap, we ask that you consider expanding and scaling career pathway investments. By providing three key services simultaneously, basic skills education, job training, and support services, career pathways get results. They help workers consistently increase skills and wages over time by collecting training options along guided pathways, and they help close Minnesota's skills gap by delivering skilled workers that meet evolving business needs. Successful career pathway programs exist across Minnesota, but they are small and can't keep up with business demand. Expanding these proven effective programs, as is proposed in the Governor's Pathways to Prosperity Grant Program, will help Minnesotans succeed and Minnesota business compete. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Julie Volk from NextEra. And then on deck are the League of Minnesota Cities, Laura Ziegler and Patrick Hines. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Julie Volk. I'm with NextEra Energy Resources. NextEra is a leading energy provider in the clean energy space. We're the world's largest owner-operator of wind power. We also have natural gas facilities, solar facilities, and nuclear facilities across the U.S. and Canada. With respect to the legislation that this committee is taking testimony on this morning, cleaner and cheaper renewable energy is good, but the language of the bill seems to contradict this goal in certain instances. The current renewable energy standard in Minnesota is about 80% filled, and the bill language actually weakens the attractiveness of locally available renewable resources. And that is through the change to allow new, larger hydro facilities to fulfill the renewable energy standard beginning in January of 2015. We're disappointed to see the direction that the current legislation is proposing for renewables in the state of Minnesota. Wind companies need certainty to invest and ensure that there is a market for their product. Renewable energy also provides a lot of benefits that Minnesota can take advantage of. They provide employment. They add to the tax base. They provide landowner lease payments. No pollution or through air or water with wind energy. It supports the local economy through goods and services that are purchased by the employees and for the facility. NextEra currently has three wind facilities in the state of Minnesota, the Buffalo Ridge Project and the Lake Benton 2 projects are in Pipestone County, and our Maurer Project in Maurer County. And we recently announced that we'll be building a solar project in Lyon County that's currently in the permitting and approval process. These existing projects that we already have in the state of Minnesota represent nearly $250 million in investment. They currently provide over $2 million in payroll annually. We provide to the property tax rolls over $750,000 annually and over $600,000 annually in landowner lease payments. And that doesn't include the benefits the projects bring in local services and benefits that the new project will bring. I'd like to thank you for your time to hear our testimony this morning on this issue.
Thank you very much. Now, you can put in an advertisement here. What is the cheapest form of new generation you can put on the grid?
Well, it depends on a lot of circumstances, but wind is certainly very competitive.
Just the answer is wind, but thank you very much. Laura Ziegler and Patrick Hines, and then on deck we have Adam Sokoleski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Patrick Hines. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. I want to thank the chair and the committee for the significant investment in trying to solve the workforce housing problem in greater Minnesota that's in this bill. We've had a lot of city officials and business leaders from around the state come to the Capitol this session to talk about this problem. Perham, Springfield, Worthington, Roseau, Albert Lea. All of these cities are facing a similar problem, and we think that the grant program funded through DEED and the Workforce Housing TIF program are good policies that are going to help a lot of communities grow and finance workforce housing that otherwise can't get financed despite the strong demand. And I'd also like to thank Representative Fabian on the committee. He carried two of the bills that were incorporated into the omnibus bill. And that's all I have to say. Thanks. And I'd be happy to work with the committee as they continue through the process.
Welcome to the committee.
Morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Laura Ziegler with the League of Minnesota Cities. And I also wanted to express our support and appreciation for the appropriation for the broadband infrastructure grants to cities. We appreciate the attention to the local needs of the community. And just to echo earlier comments, we hope that something can be worked out to continue funding for the Office of Broadband. They've really become a one-stop shop for our cities and a really valuable resource for them. And with that, I think I will turn it over to Rob.
Good morning, Mr. Welcome. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Rob Banasik, representing the Minnesota Association of Townships, and also want to express our support for the Office of Broadband. It's a critical resource center for our residents and communities in greater Minnesota. the rural areas of our state to our state's most underserved communities. And these communities and our residents often turn to the Office of Broadband for support and assistance. Thank you.
Thank you. So Adam Sokoleski is not here, is that correct, or is he here? Okay. So Dave Eisler with Tom Carlson on deck. Is Tom Carlson here? Okay, good. Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Thanks. I'm David Eisler. I hail from Bingham Lake, Minnesota. I'm the plant manager for Vestas Wind Systems, which is the largest global wind turbine manufacturer in the world. And I represent, though, the service side of those wind turbines. I have four sites in Minnesota right now, and I'm installing two additional sites this year down in the Dexter area and one down in the Windham area. And we'll be hiring 22 additional highly paid technicians and managers and administrative people for those two sites. And so I'm here to talk about jobs. We currently employ 70 technicians and administrative people and managers here in Minnesota. And I'd like to see that kind of growth continue. This creates jobs in rural areas. Obviously, if you know Bingham Lake, where I live, very rural. And from my perspective, adds tax dollars to the income of those communities, adds diversity to the jobs in those areas, and really continues to build on what Minnesota has already done in developing this. And so I think, from my perspective, the thing that I want to emphasize is that adding this diversity and continuing to build diversity in Minnesota in energy is vital. And these are permanent jobs. They're not outsourceable. Even if they don't continue to have Vestas do the service on these, continues to employ Minnesotans to maintain these energy production jobs. So let's take advantage of that unique natural resource in Minnesota, the wind, and continue to generate clean economic energy for Minnesota and beyond. A 40% RES would go a long way to ensuring that we continue to build on the success that Minnesota has had this so far. And so that would be the one thing that, if there's anything, I'd like to see that reinstated or put into the bill. So let's keep that momentum going and keep the jobs in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Tom Carlson and Ben Gerber is on deck. Representative Mahoney. Sure. Witness wants to come back.
I'm sorry, I'm pretty bad with names, so I'm just going to call you the testifier. You alluded to the fact that you were going to expand in two more locations.
Correct.
Will this bill affect your expansion plans in a negative way?
These ones, no. No. But I just want to continue to build on that. Thank you.
Mr. Carlson and Mr. Gerber's on deck.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Tom Carlson. I'm the Manager of Regulatory and Legislative Affairs for EDF Renewable Energy. And EDF Renewable Energy is one of the major leading developers of wind power here in the state of Minnesota. We've developed 900 megawatts so far, which created 900 construction jobs and also sustains 90 full-time permanent jobs operating and maintaining those wind parks. I personally am new to EDF Renewable Energy, and I'm based here in our Minneapolis office, which covers the whole Midwest region. We're stationed right here. And I've met some members of the committee, but look forward to meeting all of you in time. In terms of the bill before us today, we're very keen and interested on working with you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee on ways to improve the bill. And I'd like to actually start out by thanking you, Mr. Chair, Chairman Garofalo, and other members of the committee that were present in the legislature in 2007. I believe that all members that were present then voted to pass the renewable energy standard that is currently in place today. And thank you, because it's laws like this that essentially, you know, we're dealing with a regulated energy market, where, you know, in any given territory of the state, you have one entity controlling the distribution system. And what the renewable energy standard did is basically ensured there was a market for renewable competition. And it's laws like this that across the country that have led to great investment, great development, and just like you said, Mr. Chair, have brought down the price of wind power in the last 5 years, 58%. And what I'd like to encourage is that we keep this competition. We keep ensuring that there's going to be a competition continuing here in Minnesota. And as Julie mentioned, as Dave mentioned before me, this is creating a lot of jobs, and there's more to come. Just yesterday, I was visiting our Fenton Wind Project in Chandler, Minnesota. That's the southwest in Murray County, and met with some of the technicians there. And the message from our area operations manager was simple. It was, if we want more opportunities for existing technicians to move up in the company, or if we want more opportunities for technicians coming out of community colleges like Riverland Community College in the South, we need to build more wind projects. And thankfully, we have a lot of wind, and that's going to be more opportunities to move up, more opportunities for new jobs. And thankfully, speaking of Murray County, from District 22A, Representative Joe Schumacher is the author of a bill that would increase the renewable energy standard to 40% by 2030. And again, in this regulated market, this is the type of signal we need to know that we can invest and continue developing projects, focusing on Minnesota. EDF Renewable Energy is a company that works in many states across the country. We work in different countries. And one of the things we look for is, what kind of policy does the state have on the table? Right now, we have a great renewable energy standard. It works. It brings down prices, creates jobs. We'd love to see this increased and continued, and very much, you know, look forward to working with you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, to discuss that further.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
And before we go to Mr. Gerber, is Mr. Halloran here? So I got a note that there's some people here that were with Mr. Conkle. Have those all testified? Okay, I just want to make sure. Thank you. Mr. Gerber. And then on deck is... I'll figure that out. Mr. Gerber, go ahead. Tammy Walloff from Lutheran Advocacy. Tammy, are you here? Okay, so you're on deck. Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Ben Gerber. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce on energy and labor issues, so I'll talk to both of those right now, if that's okay with the chair. It has been a long time since I've said on the stand that there are too many good things in a bill to mention, and so I'd like to start off by saying that and thanking all the staff and the members for all their hard work on this. I know there's a lot of bipartisan bills in here, and I think that's great, or ideas from bipartisan bills that are great. And this bill goes a long way to introduce new ideas, and is a great step forward in energy and labor policy in the state of Minnesota. And I'll start off by mentioning some of the things we like about the energy policy. Specifically, a lot of the ideas in this bill, as we've heard from the chair and from people before, and even in the name of the committee, is cheaper and cleaner energy. And I think this bill goes a long way to deal with that issue specifically. And most importantly for my members, though, is that is the idea of making our rates more competitive. You've heard me multiple times on the stand, so I won't go into the data, but we have a competitiveness issue with our rates in Minnesota. Our large industrial customers are really suffering. You see that with the shutdowns in the media, and hopefully there aren't any more to come. And while that can't be just attributed alone to energy rates, when you have companies in Minnesota that are either not hiring or shuttering facilities, and energy is, you know, 30% or more of their cost of doing business, it's a significant contributing factor. And I think this bill goes a long way to acknowledge that problem, and will allow Minnesota regulators and the public to engage in a process, a fair process, that will hopefully alleviate those concerns to these members. I also think there's some great permitting reforms in here. I know a big initiative of this committee is to making energy cheaper, and a big piece of the cost of constructing an energy facility, whether it's fossil fuel or renewable, is permitting costs. And I think there's some good ideas going forward in this bill as well. On the labor side, we are happy to see that MinVest is in the bill. This is a new idea. Hopefully that will go forward as well. And then also happy to see that there is some unemployment insurance tax relief. We have, that's Representative Smith's bill. There is a significant, we've seen significant increases in the UI Trust Fund, and I think those need to be corrected, and I think this bill goes a long way to doing that. And just on one issue that I've heard a lot about is conservation. As you've heard in front of this committee, the energy that you don't use is the cheapest form of energy. And we think that this, you know, there's been a lot of concern and people saying you're sunsetting or canceling SIP. I don't agree with that. We need to have a stakeholder group made up of the public and various interest groups. I think this goes a long way to doing that. I think the chair made some pretty strong statements about, you know, maintaining his reputation and that this is going to be something that we're going to fix. And I think this is convening a stakeholder group is the right process. And with that, I stand for questions.
Thank you. Representative Hortman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering which part of this bill prevented Australia and Brazil from dumping iron ore on the world market? Oh, I'm sorry. That was just a rhetorical question.
Thank you. So do you, looks like members want to be asking questions. So, Mr. Gerber, looks like people want to ask questions. So I would remind members that we have this room until about 11:50, so we're not going to be reconvening today. We will be taking public testimony tomorrow, but for those members of the public who are here to testify, you know, we have a hard stop at 11:50 because of the floor session, so please keep that in mind for members who want to ask questions. Representative Clark, and then Wagenius.
Mr. Chairman, I was pointing to Representative Wagenius.
Oh, okay. You wanted to ask Representative Wagenius a question?
Is that I was actually trying to help her get your recognition.
Understood.
But after she's done, I do have a question.
Okay. So we'll go Wagenius, then Clark. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Gerber, you didn't, you didn't mention whether or maybe I missed it, whether you not, or not you support subsidies for folks who are buying alternative fuel cars.
Is there a question there?
Yes, I'm asking if he supports it or not.
Okay, Mr. Gerber.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, we don't have a position on that. We haven't taken a position on that.
Representative Wagenius.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. What about the transportation bill that relates very closely to this bill? Are you supporting the new transportation bill that comes out?
Mr. Gerber.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, I could direct you to Bentley Graves covers transportation, so I can't actually answer that. I don't. It's not an issue I covered.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, we don't live in silos. And I'm sure the chamber doesn't live in a silo either. Do you think the chamber supports the bill that has been put forth by the Republican caucus?
Mr. Gerber.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, I'm here to comment on this bill and this bill only, so I can't comment on any other bill.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Clark and then Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Gerber, you were mentioning your support for the great labor positions in this bill. Would you tell us your position, the organization's position, on the tip credit legislation, that language that's in here?
Mr. Gerber, do you have a position? Does the chamber have a position on the two-tiered minimum wage?
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, if you mean the tiered wage, I can...
The tip penalty, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, well, so we do support the tiered wage bill. Yes.
Representative Clark.
Just wanted to get it on the record. Thank you, Mr.
Representative
Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Gerber, I haven't found it in the bill. I'm told there's a reduction in the Workforce Development Fund from a 0.1 to a 0.08, which would reduce the money available for worker training and a variety of other issues for workers. Chamber's position on I could phrase the question, but I'll just be nice and say reduction in that fund.
Mr. Graber.
I'm trying not to be snarky today.
Mr. Chair, that's a first.
Oh.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney.
You just keep digging. Mr. Graber.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, yeah, I understand your concern about that. I'd be happy to talk to you more as well.
Well, wait a minute.
Mr. Representative Mahoney.
What is the chamber's position on reduction of that particular fee?
Mr. Graber.
Or have you none right now?
Mr. Graber.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, we don't have a position on it yet, but like I said, if you want to talk more about it, I'd be happy to make sure we get you the response.
Representative Mahoney.
I guess it's not just politicians that don't answer questions. That's fine. we'll move on.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Walloff. Please state your name. Representative McGinnis again?
Yes, thank you. You gave me an opportunity to have a follow-up question for Mr. Graber.
Oh, Mr. Graber, sorry.
Actually, it's a question we are going to be having public testimony tomorrow, and if you could find out and let this committee know of the chamber's position on the transportation bill, that would be helpful.
Mr. Graber.
Mr. Chair, Representative McGinnis, if the chair wants to take testimony outside of this bill, I guess that's I think it's more appropriate to have that conversation in the Transportation Committee.
Representative Guinness, when you say transportation bill, which transportation bill are you referring to?
Well, I understand that there was a bill that has been introduced in the Transportation Committee and that is already on the table, and that the chamber should or should not have taken a position on that bill. It's closely related to this bill. We do not live in silos. And I would like to know whether the chamber is supporting that bill or not. That's an easy thing for Mr. Graber to find out in 24 hours, since he works for the chamber.
Otherwise, is it public? Is the chamber's position on this issue public?
I have no idea.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Graber. Any other questions for members of the committee or Mr. Graber? Representative Simonson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Graber, I kind of get the sense that you're in support of this this omnibus bill. And I'm just curious if you can tell us if there's anything that the Minnesota Chamber didn't get into this bill that maybe we can get in as the days kind of wind down here. I want to make sure that you got everything into your bill that you needed.
Mr. Graber.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm sure I'll bring you amendments if we can find something.
Thank you. With that, welcome to the committee, Ms. Walloff. Please state your name for the record.
Yes, my name is Tammy Walhoff. I'm the director for Lutheran Advocacy Minnesota. Lutheran Advocacy Minnesota is a ministry of the six Minnesota ELCA Lutheran synods and bishops and their 1,200 churches. I come to this ministry with a background of faith work on hunger and poverty issues, of work on low-income issues, and there are many things in the bill that interest us in those regards, but I'm actually here to talk about the care of creation pieces as they relate to energy. As Lutherans, we believe that we are to work to live in right relationship with God, that we are to work for right relationship between people, and that we are to work to be in right relationship with all of creation. We are called as Lutherans, as Christians, to be stewards and to be caretakers, caring for and tending for God's good creation. Unfortunately, we haven't been doing a great job with that. And the degradation that we see in our air, in our water, and throughout is problematic. The energy choices that we make a big difference in terms of how that creation continues. Are we going to be good caretakers? If so, then we should push for more and more renewable energy, more and more clean energy, including perhaps even the 40% renewable energy standard that has been supported by a number of different organizations. Wind and solar are our cleanest options. They are also inexpensive options when compared to the costs of other things. We think we've known as a society for quite some time, though we haven't always been willing to admit it, that the long-term costs of coal and fossil fuels are very, very high. coal does contaminate the air and the water. The fossil fuel process oftentimes is very detrimental. It's detrimental to health. Low-income people are oftentimes the most vulnerable and most at risk. But they are also those that need the cost to stay competitive, the cost to stay low. We don't believe, actually, that the costs of coal are low enough to warrant continuing that direction. Rather, we should be moving more and more in the direction of clean energy. In fact, as we've heard from a couple of other testifiers this morning, the per-unit cost of energy, wind and solar, are competitive. Iowa has more wind than Minnesota, and their energy costs are 19% lower. We can do better. Solar has become very competitive in just the last couple of years, and it will continue to become competitive the more that we support it. We noticed in this bill that there are expansions for nuclear, but that's a very expensive option. Large hydro is also more expensive, and it doesn't bring any jobs to Minnesota. Perhaps it increases jobs in Canada, in Manitoba, but it does not increase jobs for us. Furthermore, with the fluctuations in cost of things like coal, we can see an alternating reality with clean energy. We can, once the initial investment is made, it's a much more stable investment over time, and it's a much more stable cost over time. We believe that this will serve the members of our state and low-end communities best over the long haul. In terms of jobs, we know that many jobs have been created by wind and are ramping up and solar. As was mentioned by someone else, clean energy jobs have surged 78% in recent years. They grew steadily, even in the midst of the worst parts of the recession. And in fact, total Minnesota employment only gained 11% in those same years. So 78% versus 11%. To me, it feels like we should be moving in the direction, and to the Lutheran bishops and the synods, it feels like we should be moving in the direction of clean energy. Clean energy business has increased 120%. Those are good paying jobs. What we would also like to encourage, in addition to moving in the direction of clean energy, is to encourage the involvement of low-income communities with job creation programs and job training so that low-income people may benefit from those better paying jobs. I think part of the issue here is, are we looking towards the future or to the future, or are we looking towards the past? If we're looking back, it's easy to think about old economic models and old energy models, but the world is changing, and it's changing very, very rapidly. It's important for us to be at the front end of the curve. Clean energy helps to rev up the economy. If we get stuck in old models, we may end up being like the Rust Belt states. Rust Belt states that tried to hang on to heavy industry for too long, and it ended up costing them terribly. At the time, the arguments were that it was more cost-effective to stick with those industries. It was more cost-effective to subsidize those industries. It was more, you were saving jobs to save those industries. But it meant that those industries did not change at the same time that society was changing. And those Rust Belt states have taken big hits economically as a result. We could be on the front end, and in fact, we are already leaders in clean energy and in energy efficiency. But if we, you know, if we pull back on any of that, and if we don't keep pushing forward with more and better, we risk just being mediocre. Let's not be like that. Let's not be like the Rust Belt states. And then finally, on the climate goals, which were mentioned by someone else, those climate goals that we have are specific and they're measurable. There are plans that have been made towards achieving those goals. My background is in hunger and poverty, and the Millennium Development Goals, similarly, were very ambitious, very specific, and really moved things forward after years and years and years of vague goals and diffuse efforts. And what we have seen is just phenomenal changes in hunger and poverty due to the Millennium Development Goals. The climate goals have the potential to be the same in terms of where we go on climate and where we go on clean energy. If we have goals that stretch us, if we have goals that are very specific, and in fact, while they stretch us, they are achievable, With the right plans, we could be seeing phenomenal growth come out of that. Finally, I'd just like to refer to Leviticus 30, where God says, I've set before you blessings and curses, life and death. Choose life that you and your family may love God and live well. And I would encourage us to choose life, that we choose the protection of our planet, that we choose to protect God's good creation. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Ms. Engelking, and then Tom, is it Karis or Karis? Karis, you're on deck.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Betsy Engelking, and I represent Geronimo Energy. I'd like to thank the chair and the committee's thoughtful look at all of the policies that deal with energy in this bill. Having worked on Minnesota energy issues for the last almost 30 years, I have had a hand in developing and implementing nearly every statute that has been touched in this bill. And so I think it won't surprise the committee that I am somewhat disappointed in what I view as a significant retraction of the policy that has put Minnesota on an opportunity for a very clean energy path. Of course, I'm disappointed because I consider it my life's work. I don't disagree that there are lots of things in this law that we could do better. I think that one of the things I really appreciated about this bill was that it went in and did something I've wanted to do for a long time, which is clean up all of the old stuff in 216B that doesn't apply anymore, that were sort of one-time things. And I think that's great to keep our statutes clean and not muddied with, you know, old things that have already been done. But I am concerned about I'm concerned about trying to fix things by ending them before we know what to do. Can we do SIP better? I think absolutely we can do SIP better. Is there a reason to end the current program on a hard date before we figured out what we're going to do better? I'm not certain that there is. Similarly, with wind, I agree. Wind is the least cost resource, and in fact it has caused all of our utilities in the state to over-comply with their current standard and to nearly reach the standards that have been set for them in 2020 and 2025. Does that mean that we shouldn't aim for continued growth, that we shouldn't aim to support the investments that might be needed in transmission in order to integrate additional wind and further strengthen the grid? No, I don't think that we should. That being said, I would like to comment specifically on a couple of different sections of the bill, actually one that deals with solar and another one that deals with a provision that we had been looking at for a project that we have. First, I'd like to talk about the solar siting provisions in the bill, specifically Article 9, Section 10 and Article 9, Section 14. This bill presents some significant changes to the permitting requirements for solar projects, and I think that most of the committee is aware that we have a large solar project that is currently undergoing siting, our Aurora Solar Project, a 100-megawatt project that is distributed over several communities in the state, is currently undergoing siting at the Public Utilities Commission, and it is quite advanced in its siting. We received the administrative law judge's report yesterday, and we do expect the permit to be issued sometime before the end of May. We are very concerned if the new sections of this law apply to this permit, because it would actually require us to go back and do some significant re-engineering of the project as well as obtaining additional approvals. And we do not think that that is is appropriate for a project that's long been in the planning and has progressed so far through this process, nor will it allow us to keep our construction data starting in July or August of this year. So we would hope that the committee could arrange this portion of the legislation to be prospective rather than retroactive to permits that have already progressed so significantly through the process. My second comment is on Article 9, Section 15, and I think there are some folks who've heard quite a bit about this because unfortunately it's been mischaracterized by the media as attempting to extend landowners' leases beyond their dates, and it does not actually do that. The purpose of the legislation was actually to prevent our valid leases from being declared null and void in the middle of construction of a project in order to, because of the legislation or the current law that says we're going to nullify all your leases if you're not in service by 7 years. We know that this law was passed at a time when when wind developers were tying up landowners for 20 and 30 year contracts, and farmers were very unhappy that they were tied up by developers who were never going to build a project on their land, and they wanted to get freed up so they could sign with a developer who was going to build on their land. And it wasn't really intended for projects that are desired by the landowners and might be timed out in the middle of construction. However, this morning I am happy to tell you that, in addition to looking at this legislation, we've also been working with our landowners on a solution. And this morning I can tell you that this legislation is no longer needed by us because we have successfully signed all of our landowners within the project to brand new leases that start the clock of the development time over again. That was the solution that we were hoping to achieve all along. We have landowners up there that are in Stearns County that are very excited about this project and are very excited that the revenues that they'd planned for when they started talking about this project 7 years ago are just around the corner for them. So I thank you for your attention to this issue, but I'm happy to tell you that we've managed to solve it without legislative intervention.
Super. Well, thank you, Ms. Engelking. And just a couple questions for you, because I think you're someone who has members on both sides of the aisle listen to what you say very carefully, and you're a trusted and respected person. I hope that there's some conversations that are taking place on SIP now. People are not waiting until the end of session and doing that, and I would hope that those stakeholders involve you in those conversations. I think it'd be very wise to do that. With regards to the solar siting, my understanding is that Representative Szczesinski is having conversations with Geronimo and other people on that issue. So I just encourage you to continue that that dialogue. I think you brought up some reasonable concerns that we can work on. With regards to the leases, you brought up the history of why this is. In your opinion, do we still need this 7-year blanket limitation on private contracts between landowners and developers?
Mr. Chair, the interesting story behind this legislation is that it was recognized that this lease problem was a temporary problem, and the legislation was put in to clear out all those leases and put people on notice that they had to, change their leases so people weren't tied up forever. And in fact, the original legislation was scheduled to be deleted through a session law, scheduled to be deleted in 2010. So that was recognized as a temporary problem then. Now, since then, it's been extended twice. That deletion was extended to 2012, and now it is scheduled to be deleted as of 2017. So I would say that, yes, the time has come and gone for that particular legislation. I think that it is prudent to ensure that developers aren't tying up land on projects that they don't intend to develop. But this is an arbitrary time period that doesn't really pay attention to what landowners actually want. And so I think that it's appropriate to let the legislation expire as it's meant to in 2017. It also may be appropriate to advance that.
Yeah, well, the chair agrees with the testifier, and if someone wants to offer an amendment to that effect, I think that'd be something that the committee may be interested in. So, thank you very much for your...
Yeah.
Scott, Representative Hortman. All right. Mr. Chair, welcome to the committee. And where's it coming
it's
from?
It's me.
Is it you?
I bring feedback everywhere I go.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Tom Karras. I operate Midwest Energy Alternatives Project as a clean energy consultant. I have the courage right now to admit that I'm a bit of a rare dog in this room in that I've only lived in Minnesota for 5 years. However, that experience in itself does allow me a little bit different perspective. I was from the great state of Michigan, and in 2008 helped get the 10% renewable energy standard adopted in that state. From that experience, we found out that very quickly the utilities scammed up a bunch of big wind and met their standard, and there was very little industry growth and very little job growth. Now, my wonderful wife brought me to Minnesota, and I came here just in time for the value of solar legislation that took place, that whole conversation that has taken place. I just want to say that in keeping up with my friends from Michigan, I think it's important that everybody in Minnesota appreciate that right now they enjoy a lower cost per watt installed for their solar projects than my old buddies do in Michigan. You have an industry that is growing here, that was given some birth and is growing here and is resulting in lower costs in the field. That's a real good thing now, but where it's really going to pay off, if you can sustain this growth and sustain this industry, is probably going to be 15 or 20 years down the road. When solar is really cheap, Minnesota is still going to have the best solar workforce. They're going to have the lowest cost per watt installed, and despite the chamber may very well be rallying around solar 20 years from now because it will be a lower cost energy provider with battery storage, and new businesses will be flocking here because of your established solar industry. I appreciate the fact that the amount of energy that it takes to understand energy is great, and thanks for the work that this whole committee has done. And there's one aspect of energy, though, that I think really needs to be brought into the discussion whenever you get deep into this situation, and that's the concept of full cost accounting. The cost of your energy beyond what you see on your monthly bill. The cost of the energy as far as the maintenance required on roads and railroads and shipping, the cost of energy that may show up in public health costs, the cost of energy that may show up in needing extra water pollution requirements. There's many costs to energy, and I would just ask the committee that as you go forward in this discussion that you bring into the idea that the full cost of energy is used, full cost accounting, and especially be able to factor in those future fuel costs. I appreciate your time and effort. I want you to know I really appreciate living in Minnesota. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for your testimony, sir. And did you see that there are incentives for energy storage in the bill?
That's a very cool thing.
Okay, cool. I agree. Thank you. And I apologize for saying the name wrong here, but Munir Karcher Ramos? Did I say that right? Do we have any other names? And that is the final testifier I have on my list. Are there any members of the public who wish to testify today before our 11:50 timeline? Okay, so you'll be, I don't mean to point and say you, but you'll be next if you want to come up here.
Mr. Chair, I also had a parent with me as well.
All right. So who's with me? Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, my name is Munir Kacharamos. I'm the director of the St. Paul Promise neighborhood. The St. Paul Promise neighborhood uses education as a tool to end multi-generational poverty in the Frogtown and Summit University neighborhood of St. Paul. And I'm here today to shed light on one important program that was established last biennium called the Highly Mobile and Homeless Student Rental Assistance Pilot. And that rental assistance pilot was a $2 million appropriation pilot that rose really across three different communities in the state of Minnesota, including the Moorhead area in Clay County, Minneapolis, and St. Paul. And the real purpose of the program is to look at the intersection between housing stability and school attendance and academic outcomes, and really looking at how do we address multiple issues that are afforded in front of us. And as we think about the housing work of this bill, which is included in the Housing Trust Fund, we would ask to include this $2 million rental assistance pilot, which will end at the end of this year, but the data that needs to be produced still needs that extension in order to really deliver on the results, and not to feel that we get the rug pulled out on us when we know that housing stability is really affecting both whole families, as well as we're seeing reductions in chronic absenteeism and improved school attendance and academic outcomes. And today with me I have Arviance. She's a parent who is part of the rental assistance program. And again, it's looking, the example here is in St. Paul, but really looking about what is happening across the state of Minnesota. So I would
thank you.
Like to give Arviance.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Arviance Bryant. I'm a parent of two children. I'm a parent of two children in the St. Paul Promise Neighborhood Program. And I'm guessing I'm here saying that it helps my children in, like, the education field. We were really, in a shelter for, 6 months, and they were out of school for about 2 months on and off. And since we got in the program, our kids have excelled in school, reading, math. They're tutors now, and I couldn't see that last year. And with the program the reading program that the Promise Neighborhood gave my kids, it's like once we got a stable home, they were able to concentrate more on school and not worry about where we were sleeping at night. So I think the program works good because it focuses on children being at home and the whole family, not just looking for a house, is education and everything. And once we got that settled, we were able to, be stable for once in a long time. So it really helped us out.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So next, if you want to come on up. And depending if this will either be our second to last testifier or last testifier, and then I will I'll run through the schedule for tomorrow. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Good morning, Chairman Groffo and committee members. My name is Amanda Kappas. I'm the policy coordinator for the Metropolitan Interfaith Council on Affordable Housing. We're also known as MICA. I'm here today to ask your support to an amendment to attach an amended version of House File 997, which is the Housing Opportunities Made Equitable Home Law Bill, to House File 843. MICA believes that we should treat our fellow community members as we would want to be treated. And everyone, without exception, deserves a safe, decent, and affordable place to call home. I would like to refer you to page 16 of the omnibus bill. Lines 16.3 through 16.8 reads as follows. The Housing Finance Agency must make continuous efforts to its ongoing continuous improvements to its ongoing efforts to reduce the racial and ethnic inequalities in home ownership rates and must seek opportunities to deploy increasing levels of resources towards these efforts. Also, in reference to page 19, sections 19.3 through 19.31 states, Subdivision 6 Home Ownership Assistance Fund. This appropriation is for the Home Ownership Assistance Program under Minnesota State Statute Section 462A.21, Subdivision 8. The agency shall continue to strengthen its efforts to address the disparity gap in the home ownership rate between white households and Indigenous American Indians and communities of color. The Housing Opportunities Made Equitable legislation addresses that very issue. Yesterday afternoon, I delivered this packet of information, which you have received again, to your offices. I would like to refer to page 2, which lists the agencies that have received funding from the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency's investment of $21.3 million into actual home law activities. Page 4 shows the demographic changes across our state. As you can see, communities of color will continue to drive Minnesota's population growth. Pages 5 and 6 show, list the examples of financial and social return benefits that our state would gain by investing in the Housing Opportunities Made Equitable legislation, such as additional tax revenue from the building and remodeling of single-family homes. The projected growth chart on page 6, right here, is a great visual to emphasize the tremendous need to close the disparity gap. Within the next 25 years, if we do not choose to close the disparity gap, we have the potential to lose $16.8 billion in personal income just in the metro area alone, and much more as we look include the entire state. When we make the investment to close the disparities gap, we have the potential to gain $16.8 billion in personal income. Page 7, the list of organizations is a list of organizations that support the Housing Opportunities Made Equitable legislation. As a reminder, the House of Representatives voted 130-0 vote in favor of policy legislation during the 2014 session. We want to ensure this is ongoing financial support for the home law. In closing, I would like to thank the committee members for listening and again ask all of your support as an amendment to attach the amended version of 997 to House File 843.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Members, we have reached the completion, the deadline for our time. We have a noon floor session. I do briefly want to walk through the schedule for tomorrow. Again, if you wish to testify tomorrow, please contact the committee legislative assistant. You can either email him or contact him via the committee webpage to get on the list of testifiers for tomorrow. Tomorrow's meeting will begin at noon in the basement here, the same room. The deadline for amendments will be at 2 p.m. tomorrow. And then, depending upon the amount of public testimony and the amount of amendments, we will recess to the call of the chair to allow the majority and minority caucuses to review the amendments. You'll just want to stay tuned on the estimate of time frame for that schedule. And then, again, depending upon the amount of public testimony and the amount of amendments, we also have room 10 reserved at 8 a.m. on Saturday. It doesn't mean we have to come back for that, but again, that's going to be entirely dependent upon the amount of public testimony and amendments. Are there any questions for members of the committee? Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, and I appreciate you keeping us abreast. I have managed to finish reading the bill today, and as you can see from a few things, I might have some questions tomorrow. So we have time for either you or staff to kind of explain some of the things that I have and questions they might have.
Yeah, and Representative Mahoney, we'll do that either before marking up or after marking up the bill. We'll kind of work on that as we get to that point. But yes, absolutely. And again, but I want to be very clear. Before we move on to marking up the bill and moving into member questions, we do need to finish the public comment portion of the bill. Representative Mahoney. Representative Hartman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you could just tell us a little bit about the path of this bill when it leaves this committee. You had mentioned something about contents that were in the bill that needed to go to GovOps. I know there's a piece that needs to go to taxes, and then there is the appropriation in the PCA budget. I didn't know if it's also going to environment.
Representative Hortman, the omnibus bill, as most omnibus bills, will definitely be going to the tax committee as well as to Ways and Means to make sure that it aligns with the targets. With regards to the provision government operations met council provision from Representative Vogel, that provision will need to be acted on by the Government Operations Committee. Either this omnibus bill would have to go there or the bill would have to be, basically the committee would have to take action on that bill in order for it, whether it's the omnibus bill or another way, we'll see how that plays out. With regards to the provision regarding the 111D implementation plan, it's paid for and accounted for in our budget, and as was stated publicly on the House floor, the chair of the Environment Finance Committee did not wish to see that provision. Representative Horton.
Mr. Chair, how is it paid for?
It's paid for out of the Energy Fund.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Clark.
Just a quick question again on Friday. We start tomorrow at noon and go till when, did you say?
It's going to be, Representative Clark, it's going to be dependent on the amount of public testimony.
Right.
What we know is that the deadline, so we'll begin at noon. The amendment deadline will be at 2 p.m. Depending upon the amount of public testimony, my intent would be that once we conclude public testimony, we would then recess to our respective caucuses to view each other's amendments. But that being said, if public testimony goes long enough, it is possible that we would just come back on Saturday. We would have Friday night to review each other's amendments, and we would just come back Saturday morning and mark up and take action on the bill then. In a farther context, if there's a lot more public testimony, that markup process may not take place until Monday. I don't expect that. I'm not encouraging that. I'm just letting people know that that's the form that we're following right now. So that time of when we recess to the call of the chair and when we return to answer member questions as well as to mark up the bill is entirely dependent upon the amount of public comment. We do not require people to sign up in advance for public testimony in this committee. So if more people show up to testify, then we just, as always, as they say, Representative Clark, the situation is fluid. So Representative
Clark. Thank you. Just do you have an end time on Friday, depending, let's say we get through the public testimony, we start doing markup for what, how late are we going to go Friday evening is my question.
It really is going to depend upon the number of amendments in the public testimony, Representative Clark.
I
do not like the idea of staying here late, but I am also a member of the bipartisan I don't want to come back on Saturday morning caucus,
mm-hmm.
which I will tell you is growing members every single minute. So, but at the same time, I know that when chairs try to ram things through and hurry things up, mm-hmm. it actually has a counterproductive effort. So we're going to kind of let the will of the committee and the public testimony determine our time frame. I would say, the goalposts sort of here are we could either finish up Friday night or we could end up finishing up Saturday or Monday afternoon or Monday night. It's going to be entirely dependent upon the amount of public testimony and the dialogue of the committee. I would be reluctant to give you a firm deadline, but we certainly will be, there's not going to be any snap meetings held. We will be in communication with the minority caucus about when we're going to, obviously you'll know when we recess because you'll be here, but when we're going to reconvene. We want to make sure that both sides have enough time to review the amendments and understand them. Representative Clark?
Well, I want to commend you for taking the time. That's really important, and I was just trying to figure out if we have an adjournment usually at midnight, I think, as some sort of deadline. I just wanted to know if you were aiming that far ahead on Friday or if we might stop earlier.
Well,
if you don't have any idea, that's fine. I just wondered if you did.
Representative Clark, I think we actually have to be done by midnight.
Right.
And I think we should prepare for a long day tomorrow. I think that's the prudent course of action. But at some point, if I sense we're coming back at Saturday morning no matter what, then we would probably, adjourn a couple hours earlier and just come back at 8 a.m. Saturday. So, again, the situation. Any other questions for members of the committee?
Mr. Chair, will you post online all the amendments that are filed so that people who are not present physically can obtain copies of the amendments online?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yep. Any other questions? With that, we are adjourned. Thank you.